Homemakers, our show is made possible by a few carefully selected advertisers and because of our Patreon friends. If you haven't yet, we invite you to show your love for the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/homemakerschicpodcast. There you will receive downloads to both of our cookbooks, exclusive access to snippets of the Homemaker Chic book as it's being written, and a private invitation at the end of every season to join us for our live fangirl party call. You can be a part of Homemaker Chic and show your support for the show by visiting patreon.com/homemakerschicpodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/homemakerschicpodcast. And now let's rock this show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Homemaker Chic Podcast. This is the podcast run by Angela Reed of Parisian Farm Girl and me, Shay Elliott of The Elliott Homestead, both longtime bloggers, both longtime homemakers. And we're here with you once a week this summer to celebrate the art of homemaking, to revive it from the trenches that our society has pushed it down into.
Stomped it, ground it down into the mud, down with the rats.
Yep, we're here digging it out to remind you that the work that you do in your home has value. If you walk away with one lesson from Homemaker Chic, I hope it's not on hair removal or organizing your daily to-do list.
Hair removal being one of our favorite topics.
No, it's that the work that you do in your home, however that looks for you, it matters. Yep. It makes a difference to you, to the people who come into your home, maybe to the people that you're raising in your home if you have kids. We have good work to do here. And that's why we're here with you, to remind you that we're also in the trenches with you. And it's good.
It is good.
It is.
And it's very not sweet. It's not just the... It's not just the magical moments. It's not just the when everybody uses their table manners and the candle didn't get knocked over and the counters are clean and the laundry is done for those 5 minutes. It's not those moments. It's the ones you think don't matter.
Yes.
That matter.
That matter.
Mm-hmm.
They really matter. Yep. So do you remember on last week how I said, I quoted that, like, it's good to remind... Sorry, let me restart that. Okay. On Monday, I did a quote, and it basically said, remember to stop and put the plow down and enjoy the beautiful moments, because otherwise you'll just die with the plow in your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I shared this over on Instagram, and I had a lady respond to me, and she said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That was her entire message. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I was like, well, you probably... Maybe don't should follow me. Maybe don't be here.
The plow is super glued to her forehead.
How sad. If the dumbest thing you've ever heard in the whole context of your life is to remember to
stop and smell the roses
and enjoy the moment.
You're screwed.
It's gonna be some long days, my friend. Long days. Well, this is the summer where we are answering your questions that you have. We've been doing this podcast now for a couple of years. Didn't mean to start it the week that COVID hit the world, and that's just providentially how it happened. The Lord must have known that other homemakers out in the world were going to need some encouragement as they sort of found themselves in their home in a new way. And what kind of shocks me about the podcast is that we started with no listeners. Just willy-nilly, let's just do this podcast thing.
Yeah.
And now we have millions of downloads, and the numbers just keep growing.
It's crazy.
And I try not to think about it, because doesn't it kind of freak you out?
It does sort of freak me out, because, you know, we're just here, and there isn't a filter. We're being, like, really vulnerable, really real. The patrons are watching us interact, you know, and we're just like in mom, like we're not done up or we're just here. Like I just got done milking my cow. I didn't even wash my hands yet. My hands still smell like cow, like ran up here to do this. And it makes you feel really vulnerable. I think once we get going, you know, we
once the mic turns on and we kind of do our introduction, we get in the groove and we sort of forget that. But there's those few mm-hmm. moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to go say what I think and lots of people are going to hear it.
Yeah.
And there's I'm going to try to be relevant and encouraging and authentic and not sound like a moron. Just, yeah.
Yeah. And we've done it. We've done it plenty of times for sure.
You know, we put the call out to our audience, our other audiences, when we first started the show. And now, you know, now it's being recommended. You know, people are finding it on iTunes, and it's people that don't know us. I think at first it felt a little safe because we knew it was going to be our people listening.
Yeah.
And so I think the farther we go and the more popular the show gets, it's like, holy cow, like this whole new audience doesn't have the context.
Yeah.
Of knowing our families and knowing our stories, and they're just new.
You know what I found funny, though, is like when we opened up the call and said, hey, you know, Elliot Homestead readers and Parisian Farm Girl readers, like we're starting a podcast. Turns out that podcast was not for everybody who follows us in those capacities.
Right.
Because I think naturally, when you blog, when you do a YouTube video, when you do any of these things, you're presenting, right?
Yeah, it's people have an idea of who you are. They've seen it, so they've made their assessment. Okay, yep. I know Angela. I know Shay. Not really. But, and so now this is another angle, and some people were like, ugh, not so much.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
I don't like that angle.
You do. I like you when you just smile angle. And I can just see you from afar and you can't. It reminds me of that line from Clueless. And they're talking about how this girl is really pretty. And Cher says, oh, she's a full-on Monet. And then Ty says, what's a Monet? And she's like, oh, it's like a painting, see? From far away, it looks great. But up close, it's just a big old mess.
That pretty much sums me up.
Yeah. She's thanks, a full Cher. On Monet.
My goodness, what a riot. The other day, Joel, we were at dinner and just everyone's messing around and Joel goes, whatever. I said, you don't even know what you're quoting, do you? Mm-hmm. You don't even know where that was like inserted into pop culture, do you? He said, no, where? I said, you just quoted like, that's Clueless.
Clueless
is what brought whatever.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
Oh. Terrible and awesome. One of my favorite movies of all time. I love it.
I know, you're so funny.
I love it.
It is good. I watched it for the first time in probably 15 years a few months ago and laughed the entire time.
I didn't understand the jokes that they were making. Like, I watched
you
it when
clueless.
I was fairly young and I was like, what are we talking about?
So I think it was like right on point with my high school.
Oh, yeah.
Like I matched up with Clueless and Beverly Hills 90210. Yeah. Just right.
See, that was before me.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills 90210. But anyway, yeah, here we are. Big old mess up close.
Speaking of up close and speaking of me being older than you, I went to the dermatologist. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show, and I had my liver spots lasered. I hate the word liver spots. It's so gross.
I know. It's the worst.
But they came out with pregnancy, and I had a big pregnancy mask, big pregnancy mustache every time I got pregnant, and then spots on the side of my cheeks and up on my forehead, and those cheek ones never went away. And then a few months ago, a new one appeared under my eye, and I'm so happy to say it works. The one under my eye, like, flaked off last night. I squealed with delight from the back. No, just when I washed my face. It brings the melanin to the surface. And so it got like darker before it went away. And then when I washed my face, it went away. I'm like, this is amazing. You know, we've been talking about veins and stuff on the show.
Yes.
And we had some people text in our comments about veins. But since we always talk about body hair, I will tell you that the laser turned my mustache and my chin hairs white. So I came out with a white mustache instead of my normal black, desperately needing to be waxed mustache. Isn't
that
great?
Oh my gosh. I kind of want to see what you'd look like if you didn't wax it.
Ew.
Because every time I see you, you do the full getup. Like, right? Because we're excited to see each other. So it's like,
oh, Shay and I are like so funny.
Your
teeth are
whitened.
I whitened my teeth for you.
Please appreciate it. I waxed my armpits.
Right. Oh, no, it would be really bad. It would just be like feelers out here like this. It would just be, it's on the sides. It would be really bad. Some of you listeners know this, but I've told you this story. When I was 17, my mom sat me down. She's like, look, you need to start waxing. Thanks, Mom.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I often thank the Lord when I'm doing my makeup or taking a warm shower or using shampoo. I'm just like, thank you, Lord, that you give me the opportunity to try to be beautiful. Because 100 years ago, not only would I have already died, by the way, I would have definitely died in childbirth.
Died in childbirth.
But I would have had a unibrow. Like, it just would have been really bad.
I don't have a unibrow. I just
I don't think I do eyebrows
that grow out here, though.
Yeah, what are these?
I don't know.
What are these? I have one, like, up here the other day. I'm like, so are we just looking excited? Are we going this way? Like, what are we doing? What would your eyebrows just look like? Completely untamed.
They'd be, like, down on my eyelid.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really want to find out. I don't really want to find out. Let's find out what you guys want to talk about today.
Alrighty.
So if you would like to send us a question, go find us on Instagram. We're on there at Homemaker Chic Podcast. If you don't have Instagram, you can email us info@homemakerchicpodcast.com, and we can get your questions that way as well. But Instagram is quite a bit easier for us to manage in terms of organization. So that's a great place for you to send your questions in.
Okay.
Why are you making that face?
I'm just looking at these really quick. I'm thinking about, like, are we really going to check those emails?
You get to check them. Sometimes I check emails. Sometimes I do. Okay, here's one that we can kind of start off with. This is an easy one. Jessica asked me via email, actually, what book is it that you use for your family for the catechism questions at the dinner table?
Oh, I saw that one.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with what catechism is, it's a question and answer format that people much smarter than us came up with to help people make sense of some of the theology that they were putting into practice. So when the Westminster Confession came out, they came out with these catechism questions that taught what in a question and answer format, what the Westminster Confession agreed on. And, you know, it's really easy for us as modern day Christians to be like, oh, well, this is just what the church does, or the church just believes in the Holy Trinity, or these kinds of things. It's like, well, they didn't always. Like, the people, smart people, had to commit their life to understanding these things and grappling with them. And are God and Jesus, like, are they the same substance, right? Are they equal in power? Are they equal in deity? Like, these are things people had to really deal with. And so
they had to articulate the appropriate response for false teaching that was, like, coming into the early church, you know? Yeah.
Right. Very much so. Mm-hmm. So in order to sort of direct and teach their congregation, who, you know, were the average person, they weren't able to go and read the Westminster Confession and pull exactly from it what they were supposed to. So that's what a catechism is. And so when we say we catechize our children, it means that we teach them these question and answers so that they're able to answer questions about their faith. They're able to sort of look with clarity on, okay, what is the ninth commandment? What does the ninth commandment teach? So the Westminster Shorter Catechism is what we do, but there was a great church, and I wish I could think of which one it is right now, but they came out with the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which is very much up my kids' alley, just in terms of their ages, and it's written in easy format, really easy to understand. So you guys have, so if you search Westminster Shorter Catechism, I think it's like 121 questions. You can just print it out Then I staple it together, I fold it, and I keep it in my Valley of Vision book, which is a prayer book that we use. And I just have both on my dining room table all the time so that when we sit down, we can pray through a Valley of Vision prayer. It's a Puritan prayer book. It's beautiful, phenomenal.
It's beautiful.
Unbelievable.
Please just get it.
Just get it.
Just get it. I was something we do for in homeschool is we have these workbooks. I was just pulling it up to so I could see who makes them. But it's the Westminster Shorter Catechism for Kids, and it's broken down into individual like paperback workbooks by Carolyn Weinstra.
Okay,
Weinstra. I can't read that. Weinstra. Yeah.
Okay,
they're blue and white. You can find them on Amazon, and they're like fill in the blank, and it's we use them for school.
Okay, I'm actually going to text you, Angela, right now. I'm thinking of a link. I just sent this to Audrey, so I happen to have this PDF.
Okay.
Of the catechism questions, so we can post that in the show notes below.
Oh, great.
This. Okay. There's 145. I was wrong. Mm-hmm. So here's an example, you guys. Question one, who made you? The answer, God. What question two, what else did God make? God made all things. And so it's we just usually try to do like one a week, and then mm-hmm. we'll add a new one every week, and then we'll go through the old ones as well. So it's really beautiful way for your children to be able to articulate. And I've shared this story before, but I, you know, kind of grew up in the church, and it wasn't until I was an adult that I learned what a catechism was. And the first question, what's the chief end of man? The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. I was mm-hmm. so mad. I was so upset that I could have spent my entire life in the church and, well, most of my life in the church, and then not known this, like, why are you here? What's the point of it all? I don't know. Why are we here? I don't know. And when I read it, I was so angry at the church that they hadn't catechized me, because that would have been really helpful information to know. Why are you here? To glorify God and to mm-hmm. enjoy him. That gives me ultimate purpose. And I was just so upset. I'm like, church, what are you doing? And the church is still failing. When you say you're catechizing your children, people 100% assume that you're Catholic, because the Protestant church has just, frankly, failed at doing this. I'm trying to be charitable.
that first question in particular is so helpful with the kids as they're sorting out this really selfish, self-worshipping culture that we live in. And they're seeing stories come across the headlines, and they're like, that doesn't... this has happened so many times at the dinner table where they're like, this is not adding up. Something is wrong here. And every time I just go, well, because what's the chief end of man? Mm-hmm. And they all answer it. I'm like, that's why this is failing miserably.
Yeah.
That's why this person that you just read about is now miserable. I mean, like, it just, that one covers so many things.
It really does cover so many things.
We use that one all the time, my kids, to connect the dots.
Yep. So I started a women's little August Bible group thing with mm-hmm. some women at church, and it's Rachel Jankovic from Christ Church in Moscow. That's not our church, we don't go there, but she's doing this really great four-part series, webinar series, on emotions, on emotional outbursts, and as a woman, learning how to place your emotions appropriately. And how emotions are a good thing, right? They can be a very beautiful thing. But she likens it in another book. She likens it to a horse. And you can't just let the horse run off with you and be wild, or you will fall off of the horse.
Right.
You have to have the horse's head and just sort of be in control of your emotions. And I think that that's actually really helpful, even in the context of that question. What's the chief end of man? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Okay, well, if the Lord has given you circumstances and certain emotions arise from that circumstance, what an opportunity it is to say, okay, I have to actually take these emotions as a mom. Let's say I'm angry that my kids did something that I told them not to do, and it upsets mm-hmm. me. I actually have to take that emotion, that negative, dark, angry emotion, and I actually have to hold that captive to this chief end. So like, I don't get just to indulge myself and just really writhe around in my anger and really feel it and like, I'm justified. And, you know, there's endless circumstances in which this is the case. But you actually have to take all of those things and find a way, regardless of the circumstances that you've been dealt, and figure out how do I make this serve why I'm here, which is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And it's not glorifying to God when you wallow in your self-pity and you just indulge in self, 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 self. That's not glorifying. Right. And it's, yeah. So like you said, just that alone.
Just that alone.
One question.
Yeah.
And you know what? You'll look at the world and you'll see people question, why are we even here? What's the point? What are we doing? Why are we suffering? Why are we doing well? Why are we prosperous? Why are we not prosperous? Mm-hmm. Why are good things happening? Why are bad things happening? And I'm just like over here, like, I know. I know why we're here.
Right.
I know what the point is. I know why you feel sad. I know why you feel desperate for some meaning beyond yourself. And you're going to look forever inside of yourself and be disappointed.
Right.
Because the answer's not there, you know?
When people say they're going to look inside themselves or looking, I get like a little squirrely because I know me.
Ain't
nothing good going on in there.
Nope. It's so true. Are you familiar with the pop artist Lizzo?
No.
Okay. I only know her because of the Sheologians podcast, and they did like a modern feminist series a while back.
Okay.
And I recognized her name, and she came on my radio the other day, and I didn't really pay that close of attention, but I got the general gist of her song, which was like, I can do whatever I want. I can sleep with whoever I want. I can drink as much as I want. Like, I'm my own. What she's saying is I'm my own God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it made me sad because it has this really catchy beat. People love it. It's popular. And what it's saying is like, if I can do whatever I want, then I'm going to be happy. And I'm sorry, y'all. It's just that's not true. And it made me sad for her because she will discover that. She'll look for meaning. She'll go deeper and deeper and deeper into herself, and it will just get darker and more tangled. And somebody needs to teach Lizzo what the chief end of man is. If you know her, go recite this question to her. Lizzo, we know why you're here. Anyway, okay. Yeah, we'll put the PDF for that in the show notes below. So if you want a clickable link where you can just download that super easy, it'll be there.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, I guess I need to have next question in the hopper here. Hello, ladies. Love the podcast.
Hello.
This is Kyla. I've been listening since a few months after you started. Love going back through your early episodes. That's terrifying. My husband and I have dreamed about having a homestead, and we were in the process of purchasing one. Excuse me. We close at the end of the month. My question for you may be a little controversial, but I know you're willing to dabble in the controversy from time to time. My question is, at what age did you decide your children were old enough to understand where meat comes from? I specifically mean animals you butcher or have sent to be butchered. Was there a maturity you wanted to see, or was it by a certain age? How did you react? How did they react? And how did you react to their reactions?
Do you want to start? I feel like I talked a lot on the last question.
Yeah, that's fine. This is funny, not funny. As a new mom, I was really protective with Aiden from death. I didn't want him to know about it. It was stupid of me. We didn't talk about it. He had a little tiny Bible that we read to him when he was like a children's Bible when he was two. And this wasn't my choice or intentional, but the crucifixion wasn't even in there. We didn't talk about death. I didn't want him to know that animals died. it was just dumb. It's so silly when I look back. It's just ridiculous. That ended one day when someone's canary had escaped from their home and it was out like bouncing around on the sidewalk, just flying a few feet and then landing. And it flew off and I told Aiden to look away, and sure enough, a minivan came and just smacked it as it was in the air. And I realized he did fine, and I had this moment of realizing that was really just a dumb new mom move. Like, you can just talk about this. You're so into history. You're so into cultures past. This was a part of daily life. You need to be over it. And from that moment on, I was over it. Our approach with butchering our animals is when we bring animals to the farm and they're going to be, whether they're breeding stock or they're, you know, we're raising pigs or whatever, we've never, the kids have known from the beginning why this animal is here. And you can love this animal and you can give it a name, you can do whatever you want, but like, no, we are going to be cared for by this animal eventually. And on butchering day, we give everybody permission to have their own feelings. So everybody has to help, but if you don't want to be there for a certain part of it, you don't have to. I have some kids that need to go have a moment and compose themselves because whatever they saw was traumatic or they didn't like it. And some kids that don't care. And for the ones that are more sensitive, they can go in the kitchen and they can start getting lunch ready. Like, we kind of just let everybody be who they are. I'm not going to cram it down anybody's throat. But from that silly little experience with Aiden and a canary, from that moment on, I've just been always like, look, this is how things are done. You're eating a mm-hmm. cow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's funny, not to go too much back to our previous question, but Stuart and I had a big long talk outside last night about how the Christian life actually really isn't telling you, like, here's how you should live. It's really telling you, here's how you should die. And it's the idea is, like, it is really preparing you for death, for the inevitability of death, and then also what happens after that. And I think that that's really valuable, because I do think we spend so much time as a culture insulating ourselves from death. We don't know what death looks like. We don't know what death feels like. We don't know. So when Danica, if you guys go back many, many episodes, when my friend's daughter Danica was dying of brain cancer, she was on hospice at their house. And there were many moments where Audrey had to talk to the hospice nurse about, like, is this normal? And the hospice nurse said, we're so removed from the process of death, we actually just don't even know how to recognize it.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, in cultures past, they would have known when somebody dies, there is a process. Like, I think they have it in, like, a steps. Like, this happens, this happens, this happens. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's very noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how to recognize it. I don't know how to recognize that in people, praise the Lord. But I do know how to recognize it in animals. So when you lose an animal, when it's sick, for example, there is a process that you learn to recognize. And I think it's different with training your children. When you have a sick animal, the reaction is much different, and the process mm-hmm. is much different than when you're actually doing it intentionally. And I think what a lot of people aren't prepared for when their children are around butchering animals, unless they've done some hunting or killed animals, like, on their farm for food. It's graphic.
Yeah.
It's like the stuff that they blur out in movies, right? They cut away because it's not fun. And there have been many times on the farm when we've butchered animals intentionally, raised animals for butchering, and we're all crying. We're all crying. There wasn't ever an intentional shielding our kids from it. They always, sort of like Angela's kids, participated it in their own way. So the boys are much more hands-on. Georgia is much more hands-off. She'll come out once things are in a more recognizable form.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just kind of let them explore that themselves. And we don't shield them from it. We don't say, oh, look away, you don't want to see this. You know, they know. And we let them know from the very beginning, they've been around us butchering animals forever. We started when they were, newborns, when we were butchering rabbits. So it's always something that they've been around, something that you, I don't think it ever gets easy, but you do get used to it. You understand the severity of it.
Yeah, they're, you know, we're coming up from it with respect for the animals. So that's not, you know, it's not like the stuff you see on movies and stuff. We have a respect for the animal. It doesn't get easy. I don't think that children 200 years ago were like growing up scarred because they were around that since day one. I would say just go for it and talk about it and allow them to do what they need to do. Like you said, if they don't want to be there for part of it or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they'll grow too. Like, our boys used to, they would just kind of stand back and watch. And now like when we butcher roosters or ducks, like they want to participate and they'll hold the head, you know, while Stuart will. And so and we didn't say you have to do this. It's just they get more comfortable around it, just like you do when you're familiar with something. So, yeah, have talks about it. Don't just leave them high and dry. Help them to process it.
All right. Lots of people are excited that we confess that we follow Carnivore Aurelius. We have so many messages that are like, I knew you were my people, and now it's even better.
Now that so you also funny. Think that tap water is poison.
Right. Okay. Okay, I haven't read this one, so let's just see. Hello, I love your podcast and your summer theme. A few weeks ago, you talked about perfume. My husband and I love perfume. I've always been on a journey to living clean, but never wanted to give up my perfume. She says she's found some clean ones, and she's not using toxic perfumes on the market. And, this is not really a question. She's just excited. She thinks it's right up there with dry farms. She thinks that there's hope for those of us who love perfume and still want to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. I'm a foodie. This is Lisa. I love the idea of knowing what's in my food and preserving it myself. I don't have much freezer space living in an apartment. So the other option is canning, which reminds me of the bland and boring foods canned by my grandmothers. Any ideas on preserving delicious food and storing it in a small space?
That's tricky. It's tricky because I think the tastiest way to preserve food is fermenting, but you need a fridge for that. So it kind of depends on how much room you have in your refrigerator, how much room you're willing to give up.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way to keep things shelf stable is to can them or to freeze dry them. And if you have a limited space, a freeze dryer is a pretty big unit. You need to like have a garage or like somewhere to put it because it's pretty big.
Now, if you have the patience, you can freeze dry in your freezer. I've been reading about that. It just takes a really long time. You're just putting it open in your freezer. Google it. Don't quote me. But it is a thing. If you're in a small apartment and you don't have room for an appliance freeze dryer, check that out. Because apparently it can be done in the freezer.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
So like you freeze it and then... dehydrate it?
I don't know, Shay. I just glanced at it the other day on Google and I was like, oh, noted.
Okay. Okay, well, actually, Abigail sent us an email and she said, you once mentioned tomatillo salsa. Mm-hmm. I would love the recipe if you're willing to share. This is a tasty way. You have to give up refrigerator space for tomatillo salsa. I asked my cooking community a couple weeks ago, I was like, how many of you are growing tomatillos? A lot of them have gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Like two. Do you grow tomatillos?
No. I did a few years ago.
What?
I don't know. I just forget. I told you I need a spreadsheet. I've forgotten so many seeds this year. It's pathetic.
It's 100 times better than tomato salsa.
Okay.
And I said 100. This is your salsa verde. Sometimes it's made with green tomatoes. Most of the time, traditionally, it's made with tomatillos. They're 50 times, I'm being hyperbolic, they're 50 times easier to grow than red tomatoes. And so good. So... a really beautiful way to preserve them. If you can find them at your farmer's market, or if you
I can get them from my guy.
Okay. Roast them, put them on a baking sheet and roast, like char them, right? So they're got some color on them. And then throw them into your food processor or blender with onion, cilantro, peppers if you want to, and then all the tomatillos. And then you just add in like a tablespoon and a half of salt per quart. Is that right? I can't think.
A tablespoon and a half for a quart sounds like a lot.
It is, but it ferments it. You know what I mean? Okay. So maybe, maybe I'm thinking of a half gallon. I'm going to have to find the recipe and I'll stick it in the show notes. But then you ferment it. You leave it out for 3 days in a jar and then move it into your refrigerator. And it's insane. It's the best condiment. Besides tomato jam, it's the best condiment.
Cool.
So that is my tomatillo salsa recipe. Dead simple.
You know, small space, you could get a little dorm room fridge and just have that as your dedicated food storage for foods
That's
you've
true.
Preserved, you know, if you're in an apartment.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
We've also talked about under the bed storage, those kinds of things where you can get the like nice plastic totes. So, you know, you could preserve, you could make some homemade beef jerky, you could dehydrate fruit, those kinds of things, and put those into nice airtight bags and store them underneath a couch or underneath your bed or somewhere too.
Get creative.
Yeah.
Did you freeze dry your carrots yet? I did my whole carrot bed the other day.
What?
I'm freaking giddy, man. I've got them all
diced up. How long did that take?
2 days. So
Carrots, I mean, all my freeze-drying stuff takes like 24 hours.
Yeah, so it took me two. I did one round of like, I cut them like this big, like to use with pot roasts and stuff like that. And then, so I did four trays like that, and I did four trays diced.
That was your whole carrot bed?
Yeah, I was kind of alarmed. I'm like, wait, that was a lot of carrots. How did they chop up like that?
Really?
Yeah. But I planted it again, so I'll get a whole nother round. I pulled them a little small. I didn't let them get really, really big because I wanted two rounds. I could have waited.
Okay.
And I have another bed going that I'll use for my jardinera, so I'll probably get four beds of carrots in, but I stagger them. But I'm giddy. I mean, have them. They're all chopped. They're all ready to go.
Yep.
They're like popcorn. I dropped you. Store yours in glass. What do you store your stuff in?
Yeah, I store them in glass.
Oh my gosh, I was giddy. I finished this morning, put in four trays of mushrooms. I'm like, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Avocados have been so expensive by us. I don't know what avocado prices are by you.
They're like $4 a piece. They're Who's
nuts.
Eating avocados?
They were like $12 for six at Costco last month. I went the other day. They were like $5.89. I bought so many avocados. I'm going to freeze dry them.
Huh. How do you reconstitute a freeze-dried avocado?
I don't know. I Googled it. It said you can. I'm like, buy them.
Well, you can freeze-dry anything. I'm just wondering, like, I always wonder, like, how do you eat that when it's done?
Well, we love guacamole, so.
Well, I know. Like, so do you, like, pour in lime juice and then it, like, rehydrates?
Ooh. Maybe, like, a salty water lime juice combo or something.
Yeah, see, that's what always gets me. I always think about how does this come out in the end, you know?
When it said very well, so it was cheap enough. I was willing to go for it
because
they were so expensive the previous month, and I love avocado.
Yeah.
With a fried egg and bacon for breakfast, I'm so happy. Yeah.
Yeah. If avocados are that expensive near you guys, buy a pound of ground beef instead and eat that.
Okay.
More bang for your buck. Same price. Okay, since we're on the subject of food, Abigail also asked in this email, what do the Elliot and Reed families do for summer s'mores? I use higher quality graham crackers, dark chocolate, and Smashmallow brand toasted vanilla, but was wondering if there's something even better, like a homemade Mallows melt, etc. This might be
Girls make marshmallows.
Yeah, you can make
marshmallows, don't you?
They're hard. They don't really usually, because you're using gelatin to make them, they melt. They don't like toast like a jet puff one.
Right.
Here's the thing. We probably eat two s'mores a year at most. Right. And so we just throw, and I don't ever buy stuff for it. So we just eat whatever is there. And if it's like the honey made graham crackers and the Hershey's mm-hmm. chocolate, that's just what we eat. And we just have one of them.
Right.
And I don't really think too much about it.
Yeah, we usually just get it when we're, if we're camping. I'm like, just get it. Just get the real stuff. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For the amount that you eat, not a big deal. So, sorry, Abby. I don't have any great real food options for you on that. I've made homemade graham crackers before. The problem with making stuff like that when you have a bunch of kids is that the input to, like, time that you buy mm-hmm. is so small. Like, oh, it took me 3 hours to make these, and they can eat them in 12 minutes. And it's just, like, kind of depressing.
Okay, my power mom move for the summer, this is so cheesy because it took me 17 years of being a mother to do this, but I bought those, like, Tupperware style popsicle containers at TJ Maxx.
Tupperware style.
You know, they're plastic, like Rubbermaid. I don't know. They're like, you can make pops. They're popsicle forms.
Popsicle molds. Okay.
Popsicle molds. Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I gave them to my kids and I said, have at it. Anytime you want popsicles, you make the popsicles. Yeah. Here's the yogurt. Here's the fruit. Go for it. Do your thing. So they make them at night and they eat their faces off yogurt pops the next day and they think I'm great.
Mm-hmm. I love when you can.
It was like, what, they were like $5 a package. I bought enough so there could always be pops in circulation.
Yep. So I recently did this with a homemade gelato recipe on YouTube.
It's my gelato.
My latest video there if you want to watch it. But I just make fruit gelato. You can make all different kinds of gelato. I don't. I make fruit gelato because it's a really great form of preservation. And so you have a glut of strawberries. You have a glut of whatever fruit that you can imagine, peaches, apricots. You blend it up with milk, a little bit of sweetener. I do it in my food processor. So you freeze the fruit and then blend it up. And then I bought like actual little pint size containers from the chef store near me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that they look nice. They're in like the white container with the lid.
Oh, yeah.
And like you can stack them in your freezer. And when you grow a ton of your food, I know we've talked about this before. When you grow a ton of your food, when it looks like it's store-bought, it makes people really excited. Right? When they're used to like wiping the dirt off their carrot and like cutting the top off. And like when you just see carrots in a bag, it makes them like really excited. Like, ooh, are these special carrots? You know? But, like, you kids have no idea. You have no idea. But I have my freezer, one of my freezers in my shop is just full of gelato.
Oh my gosh, that's so great.
And it's so, it's fruit. It's fruit and raw milk and honey from our bees. Like, have at it. I mean, they don't get to eat as much as they want, but they think it's the best thing in the world. And it's literally fruit and raw milk and honey. But because it's in that stupid to-go container, they just think,
oh my God.
This is real. So if I got a stamp, some kind of fancy stamp, it would blow their minds. They wouldn't be able to handle it.
That's awesome. I should get some of those. My girls make it all. It's those things for me. Like it's become like the kids. Mm-hmm. My girls say, "Can I make gelato? Can I make gelato? Can I make gelato?" Mm-hmm. Yes, have at it. Mm-hmm. They try to always keep the ice cream maker thingy frozen and ready to go.
Oh, see, but, yeah, we don't even make it like that. We just spread all the fruit. We prep it, spread it on baking trays, and stick it in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Take it out, and then blend it up. And because we don't have an ice cream maker. So that's how I do it. And it works.
Cool.
And it works. Anyway, there you go.
Devin wanted to tell us, I loved your segment on taking charge of your fertility. That book was a godsend to me. I had a miscarriage after being told for 28 years that I would never be able to have children. After the miscarriage, I followed the book's procedure on becoming pregnant to a T and got pregnant with my now 19-year-old son.
Oh.
I now have 4 children. The youngest is 11. That book should be required reading for anyone who has a uterus.
Good. I'm glad. I hope other women... You don't know until somebody recommends these things to you. So, that's great.
Last year, we finally took the jump into the freeze-drying world with a beautiful new freeze dryer from Harvest Dry, and we are so glad that we did. As a homemaker and gardener, these freeze dryers have the very important job of making sure that nothing, whether it's a bountiful crop from the garden or leftover soup from Sunday supper, go to waste. These incredible machines are very versatile. You can use your freeze dryer to preserve dairy, meat, produce, and even complete meals. Here's the very best part. Everything is completely automatic. You literally just fill the freeze dryer trays, push the start button, and walk away. Preserving food can be that simple.
Freeze-dried foods last for 25 years in your cupboards and will maintain taste and color and flavor. The food retains nearly all of its nutritional value, and home freeze-dried food costs one-third the cost of store-bought, which means your freeze dryer from Harvest Right will pay for itself in no time. This is the perfect season to order your freeze dryer so you can have it set up and ready for spring and summer bounty, whether you're freeze-drying fruits, vegetables, herbs, milk, or even eggs. Harvest Right machines are the best on the market and will soon become an invaluable player of your preserving kitchen. Visit bit.ly/HarvestRightHomemaker or click the link in the show notes to shop your new home freeze dryer system from Harvest Right today.
This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by Toups & Co. Toups & Co. believes in skincare products that nourish and restore and come from simple, wholesome ingredients. Emily began crafting skincare and makeup from her farmhouse kitchen after discovering how organic tallow, high-quality cold-pressed olive oil, and other quality natural ingredients made a huge difference in her skin and in her family's wellness. Now, Toups & Co. has expanded to not only include beautiful skincare, but also wonderful makeup products. These are products that I use on my skin every single day. I wash with the charcoal bar, and then I move on to the glow serums and the hydrating serums, all the makeups, all the bronzers, all the highlighters, the mascara, the eyeshadow. It's all so clean and so good. Visit toupsandco.com and use the coupon code HOMEMAKERCHIC for a 10% discount.
Are you ready for a well-appointed bathroom? How about a stack of gorgeous towels from American Blossom Linens? I have them and love them. For your well-appointed bathroom, why not wrap yourself in the most luxurious, thick, oversized towels made in America? These long-lasting, absorbent, heirloom-quality towels will surround you with the plush comfort you can expect from 100% organic cotton. Feel the softness of the ring-spun, combed, two-ply cotton loops against your skin. These towels and washcloths are OKIOTEX certified, so you can rest assured they are made without harmful chemicals. Unlike others, American Blossom's fully organic cotton sets of towels are made with all USA materials. Nothing ever leaves the United States. Visit AmericanBlossomLinens.com and use the coupon code HOMEMAKERCHIC20 for 20% off.
This is from Jesse. I would love to incorporate more tablecloths on my tables, but I have a bunch of small children. Is it just a matter of training them not to pull? Did you lean more on runners and shorter linens when your children were small?
Oh, girl. You are just going to have to submit. You're going to have to submit and decide if it's worth it for you and your holiness to have tablecloths. We say yes, and what that means is stains, and it means constant bunching up because kids, I'm always just like, why can't you just, can you just not touch it? Can you just leave it alone? And they can't. And, you know, it's still worth it to me. There are times when I decide it's too much and I take it off and we just have a bare table for a little while because we're one of those families too that homeschools at our kitchen table. So that's always something you have to take into consideration. There's always a training factor, I think, when it comes to kids. There's a, okay, you can see the tablecloth. We don't pull the tablecloth because da-da-da. When my kids were really little, I did not put one on. When they were, like, really small, you know, two or three, where they would grab a corner and just whap.
Right.
You know, that's just, you're just setting yourself up for failure at that point. But they do get older, and you can start to train them. I'm still teaching my oldest, like, please, let's be careful when we're eating spaghetti, okay? Like, let's eat not like monsters. Let's eat like humans.
Oh, my gosh. Does that happen?
Not yet. I just keep some, like, stain cleaner in the closet.
Right.
Rip it off every night.
And they do make tablecloth clamps.
that you can put down, like if you're worried about it being yanked. Yeah, I just keep a big bottle of Shout, and at the end of the meal, one of the kids will bind it all up and take it outside and shake it out, and then they have to go upstairs and spray it down for me. So,
Yep. There's also great wipeable tablecloths, nice ones. What are they called? Oil cloth? You can find really beautiful oil cloth tablecloths that are wipeable, that have really beautiful fabrics. It's like some sort of weird, I don't know, probably very toxic thing that they put over the top of beautiful fabric. But they're really nice. And so I have some of those too. That's what's on my table right now. It makes it a little bit easier to clean up. And then we save, you know, like the ironed things. We save those for more special times, especially this time of year.
Right.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay, I have one for you, Angela. And I screenshotted it so I don't... Oh, okay. Sarah is asking this. Favorite and least favorite way to lose weight. I'm trying to drop some pounds after weaning my second, and it's the most weight I've ever had to lose. I want to have energy to chase the kids, and also I love food. So far, I've lost a bit. But I've also subjected my family to Hangry Mom a lot. Any insights are appreciated. So I know that Angela has done the pregnancy weight weaning yo-yo 6 times.
Right. Lost a collective probably 300 pounds. No joke.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
Least favorite, like, I'm not a dieter. I remember I've been around for South Beach and Trim Healthy Mama and like watched everybody. I'm all those ones that have like names, not a dieter. For me, the most practical way is math. And so keeping in mind that I still have a way of eating. So I'm not eating junk. So you know how I eat. I eat meats and cheeses and butters and salads and things like that. You know, I love food. So like I don't eat junk food. So junk food aside, this good old-fashioned math, I use MyFitnessPal, the app, because I like incentives. I'm a very, like, goal-oriented, dangling carrot person, and you can pick how many pounds you'd like to lose a week. One, you know, a half a pound to 2 pounds. 2 pounds is really pushing it, and it will adjust your calories accordingly, and you can get really detailed if you want to as far as fat and carbs and macro and micronutrients and all that if you want, but it's just on my phone, and I would use it to log my calories, and if I had a good day, when I had a good day, it would say congratulations, if every day for the next 5 weeks was like this, you would weigh, and like, it tells you that every
that's
night
mean. That's
freaking
mean.
No way, that's motivating. That lets you know that it's really going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's what worked for me. You know, if you're hangry, like, you have to eat more. Often I think you need to eat more. You know, it's not like you need to go down to 800 calories or 1,200 calories or something crazy like that a day. They need to be really good, satiating, healthy calories that are going to fill the need. Mm-hmm. But the thing that motivates me the most, or it makes it, you know, easy, which is not easy, but for me is results. And so that's what worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My parents have collectively lost a lot of weight doing Weight Watchers. Oldie but a goodie. Mm-hmm. And I think what makes Weight Watchers work is that we all have different ideas of diet, what we should be eating and what we shouldn't be eating. And it's not really putting a philosophy on people. It's not saying eat more meat, eat less meat, eat more vegetables, cut this out. It's just saying everything has a point value. And based on your weight and what your target weight is, you know, this is how many points you get to eat. And you get to choose how you spend those. If you want to eat a handful of almonds, that's fine, but it's going to cost you this many points. If you want to have a glass of wine, that's fine, but it's going to cost you this many points. Right. And I think so it's a general gain just in terms of making people aware of what they eat, when they eat it, and how many calories basically that it has. So you guys have heard me talk about Nate Bargatze. He's a stand-up comedian. He's the best. But he has always just been, you know, just a little, like, had some weight that he has wanted to lose. And he's lost a ton of weight, and he looks great. And he still eats crap, though. Like, he still, like, throws down on his candy and his McDonald's, and he's just like, I love this. Like, he just loves it. But his dietitian was basically like, you can have those things. It's just you can only have this many calories a day. And so if you eat that, like, those two handfuls of gummy bears, like, that's going to count for this much of it.
Right.
And what I like about that is it gives people a lot of personal freedom, and it's not shoving some food philosophy down people's throats. You know, it's you don't have to change the way you eat even. It's just – which I don't think that that's great for losing weight. There's a different argument for health.
Mm-hmm.
But if the goal is weight loss, then I think that that's a really helpful resource. I will say this – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I think things like Weight Watchers and the MyFitnessPal – what it does is it gives you a reality check, because it's really easy. It's a reality check. You're like, oh, snap. I've been eating 4,200 calories a day and not moving enough to justify that. Mm-hmm. So no wonder I can't lose a frigging pound. Mm-hmm. It puts things in perspective.
Big time.
Yeah.
So when my parents restarted Weight Watchers, they had done it once before, lost a bunch of weight. And then sort of stabilized, right? And so then, of course, when you stabilize, you tend to get a little lax. So my dad poured this drink, and my mom was, like, measuring it in terms of ounces. And she was like, that's half of your daily points in one drink. Like, a discombobulating amount of, just awareness that it brings to it. I have gotten to the point now with, sorry, Angela, I hate bringing this up because I feel like you're going to make fun of me, with weightlifting, where I don't weigh myself ever. I really don't have context for what I weigh, but I'm trying to manipulate my shape. And to me, that's more valuable. I don't know if there's other women out there like that, where you're just like, I don't need to lose 30 pounds, but I'm not really happy with where I'm at.
Yeah, you've been thin. I mean, you're thin. But thin doesn't always mean the right
shape. Thin doesn't mean healthy. And thin doesn't mean the shape that I want. Like, you know, I don't like to dwell too much on my body type, or I'm like this. I just don't think there's a ton of value in that. What I've loved, though, about weightlifting is, like, you can genuinely manipulate the shape of your body. And so what I was realizing is I would see these girls, and I would like their shape, and they were thick. And I like that. I think it looks nice for a woman to just look. Thick is the best word that I can think of. But do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's like kind of a – it's not like a – anyway. So I'm kind of playing with that now. Like my – personal trainer always said when I was seeing her, she's like, you work a bunch of chest, it's kind of like you're giving yourself a boob lift, because you're building up these muscles underneath your breasts. And, you know, when you work your shoulders and your arms and those get broader, it naturally makes your waist look slimmer, because you're building it out. And so there's like a natural thing. And same with your butt. When you're working your butt a ton, it naturally is going to move up, because you're building up a bunch of muscles underneath that, which in turn is going to make your butt look bigger, but at the same time that makes your waist look smaller. And so it's kind of fun how you can do certain work to sort of manipulate your shape. And I think a lot of women, when they think, oh, I need to lose weight, that might be true. It also might be true that you could not lose weight and you could reshape your body differently.
Right.
By working out.
Yeah, I think
so. Maybe both are true. I don't know.
I think for weight loss, a lot of people think they just need to go like on a cardio spree, and just
hate cardio,
running and sweating and carrying on all the time. And I would say,
watch your calories and lift weights.
Yeah. Like,
and the thing about lifting weights is, excuse me, still not 100%, is that it's chill. I mean, you can get really so intense during the, but like you give it those 15 reps and then you just sit and just rock out to a song for a few seconds, recoup.
Yep.
It's super chill. It's really nice for moms, I think. You know, not every mom can clear out the living room furniture and dance around in her living room, you know, like, but you can grab some free weights and do some lunges while that pie is baking. You know how I feel about lunges.
And I'll tell you too, ladies, like, speaking of the emotional outbursts that we were talking about early on, like, weightlifting is very helpful for that, because I actually chipped my tooth weightlifting the other day because I was deadlifting a large amount of weight, and I, like, my teeth are shifting, which is why I'm getting braces. We talked about that a few episodes ago. My teeth are shifting, so they're not lining up correctly. So when I, like, went to go bear down on this weight, my teeth actually hit and they chipped. But there's like a genuine like expulsion of energy and rage and emotion. And like, I have sworn at my tonal more times than a Christian should. I'm just like, they're like, eight more, and you're just like, oh, I want to kill you. But then you get done. You get done with that, and like, you're, you know, the kid who left the door open, like, doesn't seem like that big of a deal anymore when you've, like, faced down this grizzly bear. But at the same time, it is really chill. It's not like, go run for 45 minutes. Good luck. It's not like that at all. It's like, try to lift this heavy thing four times.
Right.
And it takes it out of you in such a way that there's not a lot of rage left, which is good for the mom. I genuinely wish I would have known about this when my kids were really small. I think it would have helped me emotionally a ton. But anyway.
Interesting. Okay. Speaking of that, speaking of your buff arms, Shay, somebody wants to know where you get your tight-fitting tank tops that you wear on YouTube all the time.
Target.
Okay.
Because I have to they're disposable. And I know I know that's like the opposite of everything Homemaker Chic stands for, but I rot them out with my garden work. They get so stained. My kitchen work, cherry jam making. There is no world in which I could wear a nice blouse to do these things.
Right.
So I go once a year and I buy like 6 tank tops and then I throw them away.
Okay.
There you go.
What shampoo and conditioner do we use? This is going to shock you. This is like one area that I'm not a snob about. It's just so funny. I'm so fussy about everything else. I like certain products. I do things a certain way. I just get like some tubes from Azer. I don't want sodium lauryl sulfate. That's my big thing. Don't give me the sulfate. I don't want to die. Don't give me this stuff. I love Aveda products. Have I ever purchased Aveda shampoo and conditioner? Nope.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not fussy. I buy Italian lemon from Azer. I like the way it smells. And I like the blue and yellow packaging. It's just...
Okay.
It's probably a good thing that I don't add one more like... frou-frou product to my routine, you know, that I have to keep up with, because like I like my skincare and I like my Chanel mascara and, you know, my tubes.
Yeah, shampoo is hard. Shampoo is hard. I've done all the things. I've done the baking soda and vinegar. I've done the shampoo bars. I've done this like creamy weird stuff that had like 2 ingredients, you know, and they don't give me the hair that I want to have. And I don't know if it's the American in me. I don't know if it's like just the 21st century woman that I am, but like it makes me really angry when my shampoo doesn't lather. I want the lather, you know.
Okay.
When I have to use what I feel like is a quarter cup to like make it, I gotta get all in there, it makes me really grouchy. Right now I'm using a shampoo from Target I think you can get it a lot of places called Native. It's got like nine ingredients. It doesn't have a bunch of the stuff in it, but it's the closest that I've found. It doesn't clean your hair in the same way that like a super toxic shampoo does. It just doesn't. It doesn't make it feel like that silky smooth, because that stuff is chemicals.
Right.
That's just the way that it is. But for like everyday use, it's the best that I have found. It is. I've used Nexxus in the past. I've used everything, all kinds of stuff. And I tried Carnivore Aurelius washes his hair with an egg yolk. I know.
He's also a guy. Have you seen
right.
my hair?
Who lives on the beach in Costa Rica. He's not. Yeah, it's different. You guys, if you guys have any crazy suggestions, I'm open to them, but don't tell me to wash it with coconut oil. Like, I don't want to. I'm sorry. I don't want that look.
So I used to make mine with, I would steep herbs and use Castile soap and make my own. It smelled frigging heavenly. And then I would rinse it with vinegar.
Yeah.
But when you color your hair, you can't rinse with vinegar. So those days are over. If I was not coloring my hair, that is my favorite. I loved making my own shampoo. I loved the way it smelled. I loved how clean my hair felt after the vinegar. I loved how it styled, but I can't do that because it strips the color.
See, I've done that too. And I feel like the Castile soap never fully washed out. So it was like you always had greasy roots. That's what it looked like.
With the vinegar you had to do?
With the vinegar. But yeah, then you get done and you smell like vinegar. And you're like, this just doesn't make me feel good. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid you have like a cut on your leg from gardening or something. And then
you cut yourself shaving and the vinegar drips down into the shaving leg wound. That hurts so bad.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know some people are probably listening like, oh, they're very inconsistent. It's like, yeah, I am. I'm doing the best I can, and we're all going to die. So
how often do you wash your hair?
I am bumping it up this time of year to every other day, which I usually go like every in the winter. It's like every 3 or 4 days. I'm sweating. I'm lifting weights, and I'm out in the garden, and it's dirty. Mm-hmm. Genuinely dirty. We're like hit this dust part. We always hit this in August. No rain all summer. Everything is just dry and crumbly and parched and dusty. And we get done at night and our feet are covered in dust. And like,
ew.
You have to wash every day. You have to wash every day right now. In the winter, it's not like that. But right now it is. So yeah, every other day. It's dirty. I don't know. You do what, like once a week?
Dust would do that. Yeah. I don't wash my hair that much. But I'm spoiled too. Like, somebody gave me a compliment on my hair the other day. She's like, your hair looks so good. I'm like, oh, brother, here we go. She goes, did you do it this morning? I'm like, no, actually, I haven't brushed it in 4 days. Yeah, it just, it's thick though. So it can absorb all that oil. Like, I go in the sauna and still don't have to wash it. It just slurps it right up.
Yeah. We're all different, ladies. We're all so different. I saw this funny meme the other day about, it was like a personality trait. They gave it a name, and I can't recall what it was, but it was like when somebody gives you a compliment and your immediate response is to just like bat it away. Like, oh, I like your top. And you're like, oh, thanks. I got it for 50 cents at Goodwill. And like, I've had it for 17 years. And like
I hate it when people do that. I'm like, I don't care what kind of a bargain you got on it. It doesn't
just
make you a better person. But
your hair looks so nice. Thank you. I haven't washed it in 7 days. I'm like, oh, you know, I just took it out. I just got done milking my cow.
I had to tell her because she goes, did you just style it? I was like, oh, brother.
When I was,
What's
I did this.
Personality type? Does it have a name?
No, I can't remember what the name was. When I was in LA one time, we were filming, what was it? Like a home and family show. When we released our cookbook. So it was in Universal Studios. So Stuart and I fly to LA. We spend 2 nights there. Our little hotel's like on Ventura Boulevard. I mean, it was.
Don't you sound swanky?
It was very swanky. Well, I get there and I realize I haven't brought a hair dryer. I haven't bought shampoo and conditioner. I haven't brought a hair curler. I have nothing. And I'm about ready to go on this national television show.
What?
What?
I don't know what I was thinking.
What
I don't,
did you bring? Your meat sticks?
Basically, probably brought some hard-boiled eggs and some,
right? Yeah,
clean pair of underwear. We thought we would have this, like, you know, sexy time away from the kids. The kids were younger then. And we got there and we just, like, LA made me feel so dirty. I was like,
oh,
I don't even, this is not romantic or sexy at all. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is they have these blowout stations all over Ventura Boulevard. You walk down it and it's just like clothing store, nail store, skin store, hair store. And that just repeats for the entire, you know, length of this road. And so you go thinking, oh, I look okay. But then you're constantly walking by these new clothing stores and you're like, oh, my clothes are kind of, they're kind of dingy, you know. And then anyway, I go to this blowout store because I realize I'm about ready to go on television. I don't have anything to do my hair with. And so they don't cut it. They just literally wash it and blow dry it and style it for you.
Yeah.
And it's like $12 or whatever.
Oh, that's like a fantasy for me.
It was so nice. If I could have somebody
come to the house twice a week and style my hair, give me the blowout and style my hair,
for $12. It was so nice. And I was like, oh, this is how
old ladies that used to go in, you know, to the salon and get their hair done. Oh my gosh, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah, that's what my grandma used to do. She went and got her hair done, and she would wear it for like 2 weeks. And they slept in their silk scarf, and they showered with the shower cap on. But they didn't do their own hair. Right? It was like the salons that did it. It was amazing. And I was like, this is how people like this are made, where all of a sudden you're getting your nails done and getting your hair done because it's nice. And they use so many products on it. And it was awesome.
I can't imagine.
It was so great. I had the best hair of my life. I get it. If y'all are doing it, I get it.
Do we have time for one or two more?
Yes, we do. Sure.
Okay. Hello, Angela and Shay. This is from Nadine. What kind of water do you drink and use in cooking? Do you have a water filter? Mm-hmm. I would like to filter our city water and wonder if you have any advice.
Sounds like somebody has been reading some Carnivore Aurelius.
Yeah, take one look at a pipe, my friends.
Tap water.
Get yourself a water filter.
Tap water is no good. I'm in the process right now. If you guys have any suggestions, I would love to hear them. I'm in the process of shopping for an entire home water filter because
I would like to not be bathing in it.
Right.
I mean, even ours is well water, you know, but.
Yeah. When you're taking baths every day and when you're showering, you're taking in a lot without realizing it. And there's great home water filter systems now, and I think 100% it is worth the investment. They are not cheap, but when you think about what we're taking in, the heavy metals and the toxins, I think it's incredibly valuable. In terms of drinking, we drink Berkey water. Yeah. We filter our tap water through a Berkey. I try to use that to cook with. The problem is we have like the biggest Berkey that they have with all four filters in it. And
so
like when you're pulling a pot of water to boil your pasta in, it's like, okay, well now the Berkey's empty. And so
I hate that. That's why I would like the filter, because I have a pot filler behind my stove and I feel guilty every time I use it. I'm like, well, am I boiling any of the badness off? Because that's why we need the house filter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, there's this element of we can't control everything. And so it's not worth the anxiety. And then there's also this flip side of that of, but there are things we can do. And some things are important, especially if you're dealing with any kind of illness, any kind of like autoimmune issues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really even think about water. We don't really think about it. And we're just told, drink it, drink it, drink it, drink it, drink it, drink it. It's like, okay, well, if it has fluoride in it, maybe don't drink it. Maybe actually drinking milk is better for you because the cows have the ability to filter all that out. Like it's literally gone through a filter. And so there might be water that's actually better for you to drink. Bottled water, I think, is terrible. It's packed in plastic. It's often heated. It's usually tap water. So we don't drink bottled water at all. If we're going to go somewhere, we take like our hydro flasks, some sort of thermos, metal thermos. And we take Berkey water.
You drink Pellegrino. You mean plastic, like Aquafina or something like that?
Yeah. I don't drink any of that. I don't see that as a net gain.
drinking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love our Berkey. It's, it's like, it's, I think it's like the one filter system that doesn't leave the water with a taste.
Yeah.
It just is water. Brita water tastes like Brita, and you're, it's just sitting in plastic all day, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's shocking too, with when you filter, when you use your Berkey for a long time, you start to see what it filters out. It's pretty gnarly.
Oh yeah. It's pretty gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think you have a fun question you told us about. Let's close the show with a fun one. You told me before we started recording a favorite Seinfeld episode.
Oh yes. What's your favorite Seinfeld episode?
Do you know who that's from?
I can look it up really fast. You guys know Angela and I love Seinfeld. I love Seinfeld. I love Seinfeld. I'm sorry. It's wrong. It's terrible. They're terrible people. That's the entire point of the show, though.
That's the gist.
If you've never seen the last episode, they're all arrested for being terrible people.
Here she goes. You're the spoiler.
The show ended 25 years ago. I think we can move on.
But still.
Okay. If you haven't seen the last episode.
Spoiler alert.
It was 25 years ago.
Under a rock for the last 25 years.
Okay.
That might be tough. I remember watching one or two thinking, this is by far the funniest one I've ever seen.
Okay, yeah.
There's certain silly ones that just, the little Jerry Seinfeld with the rooster, that one about killed me. I thought that was so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Where Kramer gets the rooster?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the opera one with the clown.
I don't remember this one.
Oh, my
There's
gosh.
There's so many of them.
What's the opera? I can't think of that at the opera. But, oh, my gosh. What are a couple that you loved?
There's a funny one that we quote often. It's when Jerry's dating this woman who insists on being nude all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And how he's like, he thought he would really love it. Ooh, so sexy. She'll be naked all the time. Right. But he's like, turns out there's a difference between good naked and bad naked. So like she's like full body flex trying to open a jar
to pick things up and
he's just like So the other day I get out of the shower, I grab a towel from the towel hanger on the wall, I wipe myself off with it, I wrap myself up with it, and a huge spider starts running up my chest. Huge. And I
oh my gosh.
I don't even make a noise. I don't scream. I'm just like I'm just like throw the towel down, full body flex, flick the spider off. I'm just standing there. Stuart. He comes in. I'm like, my first thought was, this is bad naked. Like, I am in fight or flight mode. I'm completely frozen. Just stuck in this horrible position. I can't move. Kill it. After he kills it, I'm like, I'm so sorry you had to see me like that. All I could think was full body flex trying to open a jar, you know, like with her thighs. Yeah. Right. That's such a funny episode. All naked is not created equal. The other episode that I think was way before its time was when Kramer is marching in the AIDS march and they want him to wear the ribbon. And it shows, like, I support this, and I'm here, and I'm like, standing in solidarity, and I have the ribbon. And he doesn't want to wear the ribbon. And they offer it to him, and he's like, no, I don't want that. And they're like, but you got to wear the ribbon. He's like, no, I don't. And they're like, but you need to support this. He's like, I'm here. I'm marching. And they're like, but you got to wear the ribbon. And he's like, I'm here. I don't have to wear the ribbon. And it turns into this major, like, kerfuffle. It's funny to me. It's like,
that's
no.
That's very before its time.
It's way before its time, and culture saying, you need to do this. And you're like, no, I don't. Yeah, you do.
Change your Instagram profile.
Oh, my gosh. Right. That's great. So you guys can just Google, like, Kramer AIDS walk wearing ribbon or something on YouTube and just watch this scene, and it's an awesome episode. And it's just, yeah, so good. I love the show. It's so fun. Those are probably my two. There's so many good ones. I mean, let's just all remember that, spoiler, George's fiance dies from licking the cheap envelopes for their wedding. Okay?
Oh,
like, that is genius. It's genius. How do we kill her off?
Yeah.
George won't buy the expensive envelopes. So she spends all her time licking these bargain envelopes and she dies. So funny. So good. Okay. We didn't do any of the things we were supposed to do. We didn't talk about the cooking community sponsor, the old world sponsor. We didn't do a wine segment. We didn't do any of the things we were supposed to do.
Okay.
We don't deserve to be professional podcasters, you guys.
Oldworld.parisianfarmgirl.com. I just taught a fabulous class on textiles. Fabulous. I think you'll really enjoy it. So as an Old World member, you will have access to the full class catalog and the supplemental print publication or digital, if you'd like, and Cooking Community.
No. We have a Persian theme this month. It's so fun and colorful, and it really is like pushing people, which I love to see. So you can visit cook.theelliotthomestead.com, and you can choose either being a digital member where our cooking instructional video and the recipes will be sent to your email, or you can be a physical shipping member where we actually print the recipes off and send them to you on these really beautiful wipeable cards that you can stash in your kitchen. The whole idea is that we're making home cooks excited about being home cooks again and making it not feel so challenging. So visit those.
Cool. We have the worst connections, my dear.
I know.
I do want to say something really quick. Thanks to Old World, there's been a lot of demand for help with interior design. And if that's something you're interested in, would you please email Angela@ParisianFarmGirl.com if you need help with an interior design project in your home that's sort of come about with demand from Old World. And that's very exciting to me because it's something I tremendously enjoy. I do have a comment here about dry farm wines.
Okay. Sure.
Cue some wine music to close us out today. So this is from Megan, and she said, mega wine producer Fetzer is rebranding as Bonterra Organic, but they're not really changing anything about their farming practices. They just recognize that it's good marketing to move to position their wine as more natural and organic. There needs to be better regulations around this. Companies shouldn't be able to just fake it by changing the name. I'm so fired up. She sent me a link. She said, anyways, this pushed me over the edge, and I am now starting my Dry Farm Wine subscription, which you can do right now at dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchicclub. And for the summer, first-time customers, just like Megan, are going to get 2 free tumblers with their first order.
Mm-hmm.
Rebranding.
Mm. That stuff makes me so angry.
That's gross.
Yeah. I hate it. I hate that. And Carnivore Aurelius talks about this. We shouldn't have to, like, fight to not be poisoned. I mean, genuinely. Between the water, the food, what they spray on it, the preservative. Like, we are, and you know what's crazy? Is that, like, we are sort of alone in this. Because so much of what we put in our food, put in our wine, all these things, they're not allowed in other countries.
Hmm.
We are unique in that what we allow is so far beyond what other countries will allow.
Yeah.
It's sort of shocking. Yeah.
Yeah, listeners, dry farms, so they test all their wines, and like we've said before, they're all from small farmers around the world, small vintners. It's not dry farm wines, they're like the importer. But they're so stringent that out of all the wineries in America, none of them pass the test. That's very sad.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. But at least we have options. That's good. So mm-hmm. we get to make those choices. dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchicclub. All the links to everything we talked about today will stick in the show notes below this episode. I can't explain to you how to find the show notes. I'm sorry. You're going to have to just figure it out.
Looks different on everybody's phone.
Yeah.
And really quick, a shout out to Emily and Toops & Co. at toopsandco.com. As I said, I just got my face sandblasted, so I'm keeping it nice and protected with her sun balm while it's healing.
Mm-hmm.
And we highly recommend Shay's favorite product is the
charcoal bar.
Black. What's this? Charcoal bar.
Yep.
To I wash just her ordered face. Two. I wash my I face with the sea buckthorn oil.
Oh,
We're going out with a bang. You're totally frozen. You froze like this.
How do my arms look?
Right? And close it out, Shay.
Thanks for joining us here, ladies. We hope that you've enjoyed your time here with us. We will be back here with you next Monday. I think we just have two episodes left in the summer series. I'm going to be traveling. Angela's going to be traveling. So we're going to have a few weeks off after season 12 before we kick off season 13. If you have some incredible idea for season 13, you should message it to us. You've asked us to keep the questions going, so maybe we can just kind of incorporate a question and answer portion of the podcast as we carry on through the other seasons. I don't know. We'll see. Creatively, we'll have to talk about it. But
we'll have to talk about it.
You can stay in touch with us over on Instagram. Send us your questions there, and we'll be back here with you next week. Cheers.
Cheers.